everybody. Welcome to Important Not Important Episode 2. I am Quinn Emmett, and I would like to finally and formally introduce my co-host. Co-host, what's your birth name?
Hello, my birth name is Brian Colbert Kennedy. Hey, everyone.
Hey, Brian Colbert Kennedy.
Colbert,
tell us.
It's a hard T.
Well, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself, Brian?
I'm your friend, and I'm from Chicago, and I'm happy to be doing this with you.
Brian, what do you already do for Important Not Important?
I like to say that I work in social media and research.
Right, you put out all those awesome things that everybody sees every day.
Yes, I did a great job for a while, and I will do a great job again.
It was Christmas, Brian. No one's going to make you work over Christmas.
But I will step it up.
You could have worked more over Christmas.
Honestly, though, the ones I've made, I'm pretty proud of.
You should be. It was just, they were just a while ago.
Yeah, it's just a long time ago.
It's like when you haven't seen anybody in a long time, and you're like, what does their face look like?
Yeah, it's like that. I'm going to get back on it, though. Just you wait.
Tomorrow, for sure. Just like your push-ups, right?
It's hard to do 100 push-ups a day if you don't ever do push-ups, is all I'm saying.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So that's Brian.
Happy to be here.
We're happy to have you, buddy. So listen, folks, the last episode, our first one, well, it was a real rush job. It was important. I really wanted to record it the day I did, which was the day of. I really wanted to get it out as soon as possible because I do think and did think it's pretty timely to capture that. So listen, I know I set up what we're trying to do here, but just to reiterate who we are and what we've been up to for the past year, other than podcasting, we started Important Not Important way back in early summer 2016, you know, before Trump was even a twinkle in Paul Ryan's googly eye. Our social timelines were dominated by celebrity news and Ninja Cats, which are great. But we wanted to curate and help surface what we call the news most vital to our survival as a species. So we have always provided a free weekly newsletter with timely selected news around artificial intelligence, climate change, autonomous cars, renewable energy, killer asteroids, superbugs, biotech, and more.
And as previously mentioned, we're also pretty active on social media.
I mean, you are.
Yeah. Well, mostly. I put up mostly daily infographics and little bite-sized vital nuggets that you can use to bolster your thankless arguments with anyone and everyone who isn't standing directly next to you in your echo chamber of progressive values.
Right. And to be clear, this isn't just crazy sci-fi stuff. What we cover is the shit that's most vital and most likely to come to term for good or very bad in the near future. So the next 20 years, say, or at least the things that need to come around in the next 20 years. For example, we've ruined this sweet, sweet planet. And even if we hadn't, there's been at least one mass extinction by asteroid. And well, those awesome animals aren't here anymore. But now we are, and we still don't have anywhere else to live 65 million years later. We don't have a backup plan. So if social and the newsletter are our daily and weekly updates, this podcast is intended to be our more evergreen platform, or vertical, as the corporate folks would say. The goal of each episode is, and please hold us to this, obviously, and it's going to evolve and we're going to get better at it. And the first couple are a learning experience, but the goal of each episode is to identify one vital question or topic and bring on a guest to help answer that question or clarify the topic for us and for you. That might be a scientist or an engineer or a politician or a business person, or even an affected person or a journalist, but hopefully mostly people on the ground, the people creating and imagining change. And finally, and most importantly, our goal by the end of the episode is to come together with them to illustrate ways that we can all take action to support their cause.
Yeah, because these are the people who are either going to help save us and save the planet, or if we're lucky, maybe they'll just make us all into indestructible CRISPR robots and we'll live on Mars.
Right. So that's our structure. That's our goal. Ask an actionable question, bring on some experience to talk about it, and help us build a game plan for all of us to follow.
So this week's question is, how do we get more ladies involved in science? And to help us answer, we have two awesome scientists, Dr. Heidi Stelter and Anne Christensen.
And I felt like we did a pretty good job of not totally embarrassing ourselves.
Pretty good, yeah.
They're infinitely smarter and I guess you just have to use the word infinitely again, more experienced and more eloquent and all of those words than we could ever be. But please remember, we're new at this and the structure is evolving and I promise we'll get better. Or the world will just end all of a sudden and it won't matter. But hopefully not. And we're going to keep fighting back until it does or doesn't, whatever. Anyways, let's dive in.
Let's go.
Our guests today are Dr. Heidi Steltzer and it seems like almost Dr. Ann Christensen.
Almost Dr. Correct.
We referenced these guys in our March newsletter. They were featured in a Think Progress article titled 76 Women on a Glacier Are Changing the World, which is a pretty badass headline.
Pretty badass.
So let's find out who they are. Heidi, Ann, welcome.
Thanks for having us.
Of course. So let's start off pretty basic. Tell us your story. Who are you? Where did you come from? And what do you do?
I am a rural country girl. I grew up in a suburb of Boston back in the 80s. I can't say I really heard of climate change much growing up. All through undergrad, I really felt like science had the potential to help people and inform their decisions and make better choices so that more people are cared for well in our world. More people are safe, more people are protected, and there's better health. And I wanted to figure out a way that I could study science and biology, but not go into medicine, which at a school like Duke is pretty hard to do because everyone around you is going into medicine. So I took a class in biogeochemistry as a sophomore, which says something about the science that I'm interested in. I couldn't pick one, so I picked three. And it's about how our earth works. And that's what I still continue to do today is understand how our earth works and try and put that in whatever context needs to happen for conversation and helping and caring for people.
Well, that might be the best opening statement ever. Anne, good luck.
Oh, thank you. Thanks, Heidi. So I grew up suburbs of Twin Cities in Minnesota to a economist father and a stay-at-home mother that was not at home. And to explain that, she is a force to be reckoned with. And she was constantly volunteering or hiking Patagonia or golfing or bowling. And she is a marine biologist at heart. So when I was little, she would bring me out to the woods or to the nearby lakes and streams and teach me everything she knew about biology because she was a biology teacher in her previous life. In college, I decided not to be a biology major. I did environmental studies, which was more social science and political science. And then I did a minor in women's studies. And I've been trying to get back to my naturalist roots ever since then. And this PhD that I'm undertaking right now is part of that endeavor. But because I had such an interdisciplinary undergraduate experience, I was able to do a lot of very cool, very, very different things in my years after graduating, including working in the U.S. Congress and studying meerkats in the Kalahari deserts and being a lobbyist. And so I'm fitting all of those different experiences into one massive PhD and trying to balance my love for nature, and that's where I get most of my energy from, with my interest in how to apply what I've learned in all of these experiences to a career once I get out of school again for the third time.
Right. It almost sounds like you created and packaged your own liberal arts degree,
yeah,
you know, touching on so many different things.
I did, which is to the unending frustration of my advisor. But we went to the same undergrad institution, so she kind of understands, but has a lot of patience with all the different fields that I want to focus on.
Well, that's awesome. It's hard to do one thing, you know, especially when there's so much calling our attention these days and so many things that, you know, you ladies are so good at and we need you to do. And I'm sure someone has mentioned this to you before, but you're aware that there's another human named Ann Christensen who is in the classic film Homeward Bound.
I am aware.
We really wanted to surprise you with that one.
Yeah, that's really bizarre.
I know. It's the only other Ann Christensen that I can find online consistently.
Have you found this person
online? Of course, we all Google ourselves and she comes up first.
Sure, sure, sure.
That will change.
My older brother shares a name with apparently considerably popular Australian porn star. So that's a tough one.
Oh my God.
Ooh, that's hard to get over.
Yeah. Yeah. So just take your homeward bound and be happy with what you got, I guess. So Heidi, I know you worked at the Department of Energy for a little bit in 2015, and I think you were on a specific White House council, which I imagine both those programs are going spectacularly well right now. But so let's cut to it. Talk to us about what you guys did this week.
Sure. Well, when we were on the ship in Antarctica a year ago, I guess it was a year ago today, wasn't it, Heidi?
Oh, wow.
We're talking about how we could communicate and how we'd had such different experiences in our lives, but we connected pretty quickly on the ship.
You two or all
us,
of the
well,
women?
All of the women, but us two specifically.
Anne's really an incredible naturalist, and I just can't see. I'm the biologist, but she's the naturalist. Mm-hmm. And so I found that if I tagged around behind her, I would see a lot more wildlife than if I was on my own. So.
Smart. Good move. Good move.
So we were talking about, and multiple conversations on the ship were how scientists can communicate. And I gave a presentation on how to talk to policymakers. And Heidi and I were brainstorming about how we could combine our expertise to be more effective after the voyage. And one of the things that we landed on was having a congressional briefing on polar climate science and science communication. And it's taken several months to put it together, but I contacted some friends who are still in Congress and asked them if they would sponsor the briefing.
Were there any Congress people there? Sorry to interrupt you.
No. So these briefings, Congress people don't usually come to them. They send their staff out and to report back.
Gotcha.
the people who get a lot of work done.
Yeah. Right. Yes.
Yeah. Monday, when this was going on, the House was debating the tax bill and voting on the tax bill. So they were a little busy on Monday doing the people's work.
Kind of. Yeah. Sure.
Does sarcasm not translate through these microphones?
They're really good microphones.
Yeah. Yeah, I feel like we can have an after-hours chat about that shit show. So what were some of the questions these guys asked? Do you feel like they had... Where did they come from on this? Do you feel like they were speaking more for themselves than their office, or do you feel like they were actually speaking for their constituents and trying to represent their interests and needs and fears and hopes and such?
Well, I'll let Heidi answer that first, because I'm curious what her answer will be, and I don't want to sway her one way or another, because we may have different views on how they're asking their questions.
It was an incredible experience. And sort of one of the things that I've learned is, when you're giving talks and you're not sure how people will respond to something, start by introducing yourself to people before you even start talking. So during the lead up to beginning, people are coming in the room, and I made up a purposeful choice to go and talk to a few people. And I felt like it was a crowd ready and welcome to some ideas. But then it's also the approach that I've chosen to take on science communication is one that I hope many people would be open to. So climate change is about the things that we care about. It's about financial security. It's about human health and well-being of ourselves and others who we care about. And climate change links and ties into feeling protected, feeling some sense that things aren't going to change so rapidly that we won't do well.
Sure.
So I felt like people were really open. They asked questions about where and what can we do about it? How can we... through education, create opportunities for more people to understand what's happening and support students. The undergrads, I teach at a college that's primarily undergrads. And the students that I teach, this is what they want to study. This is what they want to learn about. And they want to make a difference in the world. And I love that one of the staffers in the audience asked, what do we need to do for education? And I said, we need merit-based aid for students. So if you're willing to work hard, then we'll give you the money so you can stay in school.
Sure. Fascinating. So, I guess, Anne, how do you think it was received?
And don't be swayed by Heidi's answer.
I think it was received very well. The staff, I know that the staffers who are there, their bosses are some of the most actively pro-environmental people on the Hill. And so they want to stay up on the latest science and, you know, educate themselves, but in order to educate their bosses as well. And the way that congressional staff works, at least on the House side, is that each staff member has several different issues which they cover. So they may not necessarily be an expert in every issue. Mm-hmm. And you're actually lucky if you get a staff member that is an expert in every issue. And so some of the staffers that were there, some of them had PhDs in environmental science, but other ones were probably political science majors in college and have no environmental background, but are stuck with that issue with an environmentally active boss. Sure. And so they were there to, they ask questions so they become more intelligent about the issue. But then the question that Heidi mentioned about how education, what we need to change in education was probably because that staffer was, their boss is on the education committee. And mm-hmm. so if you are a staff member for an issue that your boss is not on sitting on the committee that has to do with that issue, if you want more face time with them, if you want your ideas and your passions to get across in the agenda, you need to be able to connect it to what they are working on most often. So I think that the education question was actually coming from that angle of how can I engage my boss on this issue when they are more actively engaged in something else. And I think that this was one of the messages that I tried to have for the other women on the ship was when you're talking to policymakers, you need to know what their pet issue is, what is most important to them, and then tailor your message to fit what they most care about.
You need to meet them where they are a little bit.
Right. Rather than trying to get them to care most about your message.
Sure.
So I think that that was what was going on for a few of the questions there, which is great because we do need to have a more interdisciplinary message and more interdisciplinary view of climate change. It does affect education. And we never talk about that.
Yeah. And I feel like that applies to everything. I mean, you see, I love tech nerdery as much as anybody, but you know, you see a lot of these bigger companies, which have obviously been in the news in the past couple of years, have sprung from nothing. And, you know, there isn't a single liberal arts major, you know, in the executive ranks, much less creating the project and asking things like, should we do this? Why should we do this? Why should we not do this? How will it affect people? You know, how will it affect society? And that's really important, again, whether it's climate change or tech or space exploration or things like that. So that's interesting. Do you feel like there was anybody from the other side of the aisle there?
I know there wasn't.
You know there wasn't, really?
Yeah.
Wow.
On that tax bill that has the Anwar drilling in it. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. I mean, that's so interesting. But we can make headway. And we can have these discussions. I'm convinced mm-hmm. of it, that that with the right framing and a little bit of a thick skin, we can start to have these conversations, have them be constructive, and work towards finding that common space where climate change doesn't have to feel scary, and it's something we can talk about with people who have a different perspective than us.
Do you feel like, I don't know really the right way to do this, and it's sort of the same thing with healthcare, which is, it's incredibly frustrating and pretty dark, but I mean, do you almost feel like these folks need to start actually feeling the effects themselves in some way before they're going to make any moves?
I don't want them to have to.
Right.
And, but I also don't think that that will necessarily help, because a lot of the first, I guess, shots of climate change in America are happening in the South.
Right.
You know, the Houston flooding and Katrina, and one of our first climate refugee communities is along the Gulf Coast, and another one's in Alaska. And it does not seem to be helping. So I honestly don't know what it will take. I had a professor say once that he thought it would take a natural disaster that killed tens of millions of people for humanity to finally wake up and start doing something. Phew. And I really don't want that to be, I don't want him to be right. And he said that 10 years ago.
Right.
So I really don't want that to be right.
Right. Right. I mean, you know, things like Houston and Puerto Rico and the Virgin Islands are bad enough for watching. I spend half the year in Virginia and half the year in Los Angeles, and Los Angeles is on fire.
Still on fire.
Very Brian's there right now, and it's on fire, and it's December, which is not okay. And at the same time, it could get so much worse, and you just, you know, we're relying on folks like you to stay optimistic, to keep pushing these conversations and try to meet folks to a place to say, like, look, it's not something you have to fear. It's not going to destroy your business. It's not going to ruin your identity to look around and say, we can make some changes. We can do some at least small moves to try to affect things. Does that sort of obstacle, does that change at all how you guys feel personally? Do you still feel like you're on the right path, or do you feel more empowered?
I these days feel more empowered. I feel like there are new conversations that are starting, conversations that I wish had taken place 20 years ago.
Sure.
There wasn't the momentum there. And, you know, we're recording this podcast at the end of 2017, a year in which there was a women's march, and then there was a science march, and then there was a climate change march. And I'm a woman who studies the science of climate change. And so, you know, putting all those things together, there's a chance for new conversations, and investing in that and being able to brave that new wilderness that for so long has been scary to me, there's a chance to feel more interconnected with people. And personally, I think that's ultimately one of the solutions to climate change, is to realize that a lot of the things that we do that are very carbon intensive,
sure,
and demand a lot from our environment, our world, we're often doing in order to fill gaps and voids in our life.
So I guess that takes us to Homeward Bound a little bit. And, you know, on a couple levels, you talked about meeting peers and developing relationships with them that don't necessarily, no one's personally getting anything from them. It's about a shared goal and a shared vision and a shared, you know, personal and professional lifestyle. And Heidi, you had a Medium post talking about Homeward Bound, said, faculty want women to understand why they need to take up leadership roles in science and in society at large. And that feels so necessary. And at the same time, it seems a little different than meeting peers in ballrooms at speeches. You're reaching out to educate and to bring along the sort of next generation of awesome women that are doing this. So I guess tell us a little bit about Homeward Bound. I'm sure you guys have talked about it a lot, but we'd love to hear.
And then we'll talk about the movie.
Yeah.
Okay. The movie?
Homeward Bound, remember?
Oh, that movie.
Starring
that, that I star in. I'm sorry.
Starring you and a dog.
And featured in the movie.
come on.
So, I mean, a lot of people have asked us at different times, what made you decide to put your name in the hat? And a friend sent me an email back in 2014. And the email was the call for submitting a application to Homeward Bound. And I'd long been interested in opportunities for leadership and learning how to move into that space and have more training, more expertise in it. As an undergraduate, I did a lot of wilderness leadership, taking groups out into the mountains of North Carolina. Mm-hmm. Usually it was upperclassmen taking freshmen out prior to starting their freshman year on Outward Bound Knowles-like experiences.
Yeah. Sure.
So I did that, and I took a class in undergrad called Leadership, Policy, and Change. And then I did a program here in Colorado that's the Colorado Institute for Leadership Training. And in each one of those times, I learned a lot, but never before until Homeward Bound was it such a big, deep dive into understanding myself better. And I mean, not in a way where there were the kind of self-evaluations that are part of what training would be available to CEOs in companies. That kind of training isn't really available to scientists.
Sure.
Or at least it's very narrowly available. And I can't believe the process of what it's like to do a values elicitation and to lay out all these cards that say different things that we can value in our world, and to try and figure out which 10 are my top 10 out of 200. And I picked 10 and put them away and felt really,
do you remember?
And felt really good about myself. And well, here's the funny story, is that then I took out the cards the next day and I redid it, and almost all of them moved, and it was a different 10. And it really feels like it's not because my values are changing so much as I hadn't gone through this process before, and it takes going through the process.
You sure it wasn't just like a Ouija board or something?
Focus on it. I mean, they're cards and you're moving them around and I writing them down and trying to see if it's really you. And
sure.
And compassion is one of the ones that stands out as being really important to me, and justice. And I hadn't really realized to what extent justice and equal opportunity was part of what underlies why I became a scientist. And that's that caring for others and feeling like if I have clean air to breathe, then other people should have clean air to breathe. If I can make good choices about the foods I eat and have a nutritious diet, I want other people to have that and clean water. And we can't be making choices where some people live until old age and other people develop environmental related illnesses. And certainly it's even more heartbreaking when it's children that are developing diseases that are environmentally caused and we could have prevented that.
Sure. Sure.
One of my main values was justice too, Heidi.
I'm not surprised by that.
You guys are warriors. So it's
you guys are the best.
We're having a great time. So it seems like the trip was almost as much, and this is really interesting. I guess it makes sense, but almost as much about self-realization as it was about meeting other awesome women who are doing kick-ass things across the sciences.
You know, for some people, a lot of people there are several self-reflection exercises having to do with personality traits and strategy mapping of really your life and figuring out your values. I was very clear on most of those things. Mm-hmm. When I scored very high on competitive and argumentative, that was surprising to no one. I got home and all my family laughed that I had scored. I realized the irony of this statement. I had scored the highest competitive score on the ship.
That's kind of incredible.
And someone else was bragging they had scored 96th percentile. And I said, well, I scored 98th, which very much underlined why.
Oh, that's incredible.
And I had a pretty clear idea about my values. In my family, we talk a lot about values, actually. And justice is one of the primary values in my both nuclear and extended family.
So it was about a year ago. I mean, you guys hop on this boat 4 weeks after ship. Sorry. I know my best friend's a submariner. I get yelled at about that all the time. Subs are boats.
We got yelled at for 3 weeks about that. So
for calling
I said
it a
that
boat?
Mostly for Heidi's benefit.
Yeah, it's pretty strict. It's pretty strict, Brian. Wow. Be careful out there. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So you hop on this ship about 4 weeks after Trump gets elected. What is the mood on the boat as far as science goes?
Can I answer this first, Heidi?
Go for it.
I was so angry and people commiserated, but I heard a lot of, oh, it's going to be okay. And I just wanted to shake people and try to explain to them how it was not going to be okay.
Was there any differentiation? Was it younger women or older women or different?
It was women not from the United States who were saying
that.
That's
what I was going to ask.
Gotcha.
Yep. It was women who are not from the US. Everyone from the US was scared shitless and mm-hmm. people in other countries were appalled, but they were not. I don't think they understood the magnitude of what it means to have one party controlling both houses of Congress and having a completely unstable president. That was extremely frustrating to me because about how many years ago? 7 years ago, I had a cousin killed in the Haiti earthquake.
Oh.
And oh, wow. Discovered that grief is very different from sadness.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of, if you haven't had someone close to you die suddenly, or if you haven't gone through a traumatic life event, there's no way to explain what grief feels like. And I firmly believe that a lot of Americans were experiencing grief for the first time and not being able to label it.
Fascinating. Yeah.
It's visceral and it is scary and it is, you can't just smile and get on with life. You actually have to wait it out.
You got to deal with it.
And you have to, But it time is a huge factor in being able to move. And you never move past it. You just move forward.
Sure.
You never get over something like that. And so I'm trying to explain to people to just let Americans grieve, because that's what we're doing. We're grieving over the loss, the complete loss of a society that we were expecting. Because after, especially if you come from a progressive mindset, after 8 years of Obama, you're thrilled that we have gay marriage and that we have given health care to people who couldn't afford it and who needed it most. And we're slowly tackling race issues. And
slowly.
It was, and then we had the first female nominee for a major party.
Sure.
And to lose all of that, and from coming from Congress and understanding and reading weekly the legislation that Republicans want to pass that has to do with the environment, the anti-climate change legislation, the rescinding public lands designation legislation, the attacks on the Endangered Species Act, the wanting to drill in the Arctic and wanting to mine minerals in a salmon fishery. Right. I mean, all of these, that's the pebble mine, all of these issues, knowing that now they're going to happen. They're going to be able to pass this legislation. Right. So when people would tell me on the ship, oh, it will be okay, it just reminded me of all of the stupid things people told me after my cousin died and how it doesn't help to say that. What you need to say and what I wanted people from other countries to say was, this is appalling. How can we help?
Sure.
And they weren't saying that. And that was very frustrating to me. And it was frustrating to me to be on that ship with all these women and having someone who I was very excited about becoming my president, not being voted into office, and for a large part because she was a woman.
Sure. Plenty of candidates lose all the time and people are bummed, but this was very different.
This was different. And I was trying to explain that to people. And so it was very difficult for me. And I had bought my inaugural ball gown and I had bought my plane ticket to DC because I was so sure she was going to win. And so it was because I had already bought my ticket. I did, when once we got back from Homeward Bound, I was able to go to DC and participate in the march.
Oh, that's awesome.
And that was fantastic.
Did you wear your gown?
No, I usually just wear it when I'm doing homework in my house, actually.
Sure, that's fair.
It's my fancy homework time. But no, it was, being on the ship was very difficult for me at that time because it was a reminder of what I was not going to be able to experience. And there were very few people who understood what I was going through.
And so much of what you stood for and what every woman on that boat stood for, whether international or not, was, and whether those international based women understood it, was about to come under severe attack. And now we look, you know, a year later, and I have to imagine that besides the outreach you guys are doing and the education you're doing, I imagine that your more technical jobs have become more difficult.
You mean in terms of attacks on science?
Yeah, sure.
Absolutely.
Wow. There's so many things. For me, I live in a fairly rural, fairly purple part of our country. And so my experience getting on the ship was finding more people who shared my values and saw things in a similar way versus I felt like within the region that I live in, people were willing to, well, let's just give them a chance to govern and see how it goes. And I thought, no, I don't think this is going to go well. And I think part of that ties into what Anne is sharing, which is the one-way door when you change a landscape from being conserved and protected to being one that is dramatically altered by people. One of the things that I love about the places I go for field work, one of the things that's just incredible about Antarctica is seeing landscapes from the top of a hill, from the top of an ice snow-covered landscape, and not seeing a road or a trail or an airplane or another ship or any kind of structures and feeling in a space that the environment is in control and you don't know what you'll see around the next corner, and it's probably not going to be another person. It's going to be wildlife. And I love being in those kind of places. And being with people who could appreciate being in those places felt really different than being in the region of Colorado where I live and having more people who felt like, well, let's just see where this goes. And, oh, I was tying it into conservation and it doesn't take much to change a landscape and transform it to where it doesn't provide for human health and human well-being in the same ways. And that's saying nothing of what's fair to the species that live there, that depend on that environment. And a big piece of what we've seen over this year is with, as Anne was saying, with all the House, the Senate, and the president lined up within the same party, it's the one-way door to the other side, the side where we transform these landscapes, Desert Southwest, Anwar, and other places to landscapes that we can't put them back. If you've studied ecology at all, you know, you can't, it's Humpty Dumpty. You can't put the pieces back together in anything close to the same kind of functional system again.
There has to be some grief there as well.
Yeah. And we shouldn't risk certain changes. We depend on some of these services of plants sucking carbon out of the atmosphere and and landscapes filtering water too much to alter them.
Right. Yeah. My brother won't hear this until after Christmas, but he's been trying to get me to read The Rise of Teddy Roosevelt for years. And I finally did. So for Christmas, I got him a t-shirt that says Vote for National Parks with a big picture of Teddy on it.
Are you going to read the next two books?
I've heard they're pretty good, but the first one is the best one. I don't know.
The first one is the best one.
I was just like, this guy is amazing and a crazy person, but I'm into it. But it was really just incredible. But yeah, you know what he and others did to do those things. And, you know, it's amazing that they can shrine these folks. And I spent part of my life spending a few weeks each summer down in the U.S. Virgin Islands and always knowing, you know, the economy was holding on by thread a little bit. It's so heavy tourism based, but St. John in particular is 70% national park, and being so thankful that Rockefeller did what he did to preserve that place. And then you see the devastation that can be wrought when you get two category 5 hurricanes in 5 days and realize that we as humans, none of the people on this call, can have that same sort of effect on certain preservations by opening them up to drilling or even just opening them up to people in general. And there's a few stages of grief there. There's a shock, there's a sadness, and there's definitely some anger. But like you said, and a little bit with climate change in general, when I feel like shaking people is letting them know, like, this is a ticking clock. This isn't something we can just reverse every time somebody else becomes president.
Yeah. Well, and this was something that we've known climate change about since the early 1900s.
Right.
So we talked a lot in the briefing on Monday about thresholds and feedbacks and how, and Heidi can speak better to this than I can, but how we're reaching these thresholds where there is no turning back once we get there.
Right.
And that is something that I think a lot of people in the general public who don't study climate change don't understand.
Right. And you know, that's a lot of what we're trying to do and sort of what we're trying to do with this podcast and talking to you folks is sort of encapsulate. We want to sort of represent our listeners, which are, you know, pretty progressive and pretty frustrated and angry and more action oriented than maybe they've ever been, in the past year, educated, but probably don't understand the specific, timelines and details about, you know, if an iceberg breaks here, it affects sea level rise here, the emissions, what plants are pulling things out of the atmosphere, you know, carbon capture, yada, yada. So our hoping to talking to folks like you is to sort of be the, I guess, the vehicle for them to try to translate that so that we can recognize that there are some things we're not going to be able to go back on already, because like you said, we've known about it for this long and we haven't done shit.
Something that I want to stress is that we've failed so many times on the international level to address this. Mm-hmm. And I really think the solutions are going to come at the household, city council,
sure,
and corporate level. And I think people don't necessarily need to understand how an iceberg breaking off is going to affect them.
Sure.
But they do need to understand that it's happening and what they can do about it. And I think the solutions we're going to see are going to be cities taking really innovative steps to curb transportation pollution or construction pollution or use of materials, or, you know, methane emissions from landfills, or corporations taking different steps for how, where they source their materials from, the life cycle of their products, how they package different products, where that plastic goes. Also the equity issues that come with corporations, who's recycling the metals that are in our iPhones and are in our computers. And right. Typically we're shipping this to low-income countries in Asia, and people are dying from our pollution directly.
Sure.
And so understanding more about those decisions and really encouraging people to not just come out for national elections, but understanding that their local city council decisions may have even more of an impact on ultimately on climate change than who our president is.
Sure.
Yeah. And really tuning into those.
I had a really interesting conversation today from a incredibly smart young woman who's affiliated with the 500 Women Scientists group. Not sure if you guys are too familiar with them. Started like everyone else in the past year. And we had a really interesting discussion about finding ways to empower folks at the township level, the city level, mayors.
Did you talk with Jane?
No, I talked to a woman named Jewel, who was so much smarter than me. But she was very patient. And we just talked about, you know, how do we utilize our ability to publicize things and to get the word out and inspire community, and their ability to, you know, straight up educate folks. They've built all these really cool pods, as they call them, around the nation. And in each pod is a variety of women scientists across the disciplines, and how they might be able to, you know, host parties or talk to folks or provide a hotline for people who might want to go up to their, who might, you know, find out that a fucking tax bill passed in the middle of the night and all their calls that they've made for the first time in their life actually amounted to nothing, which is incredibly frustrating and, you know, and makes you want to walk away and might go, well, you know what? Fuck it. I'll do it myself. And is going to go to a city council meeting for the first time and say, do you know where the most emissions come from in our city? And if they don't have the answer, demand why. And if they don't do enough about it, then maybe they just say, screw it. And they run themselves or they run for mayor. Because as much as it's incredible how many more women are running for the House, the National House, than ever before, how many scientists are running than ever before, you know, gerrymandering is going to be a really severe obstacle, at least until hopefully 2020, when we make enough progress that we can take it back. It's a fucked up, vicious cycle. But like you guys said, people can make on the household level, in their towns, in their cities, you know, they can make such a big impact if they just get there and they start with, do you know if our water is okay? Do you know what our air is like? And if not, why not? And how do we find out? And who are the companies producing it? Are they in this town? Are they coming from outside this town and just poisoning us as the train goes by? And that's someplace where they can really, I feel like, take some pride and make some change.
Absolutely. Well, and gerrymandering also comes from the local level. It comes from people not getting out to vote for their state legislatures and being very engaged in your local politics and what you said with where, how our municipalities are using energy and using the environment is probably the most important thing we can do right now.
And it's just, I mean, like I said, I spent half the year in Virginia and half the year in Los Angeles. I mean, yesterday, for the first time in 25 years, the Virginia House of Delegates got Democratic control because of one vote.
Oh, yeah. Recount.
So I don't know if you saw the news in the last hour, but now it's tied again.
And do you know what? How they fixed the tie? Have you guys heard this? They pull a fucking name out of a hat.
Great.
Yeah. No, super, super great. The same way they decide whose name goes first on the ballot, they're going to pull a name out of a hat. And it just makes me,
oh my God.
But if there's never more evidence about like one vote, because if the Democratic name is pulled out of the hat, this woman in Newport News, who's so awesome, if the name is pulled out of the hat, she wins and the Democrats control, 450,000 people are eligible for Medicaid in Virginia. And that changes because literally of one vote in Newport News. And it's the same thing, you know, when it comes to whether your downtown bans cars, which your city council might have never even considered, but could have such an impact and become such a cool story.
When you spoke to what the audience for your news organization is, people who are frustrated, What you're describing is the solution to frustration. The solution to frustration is to start figuring out where and how can I be more involved. And when the first opportunity and idea you have doesn't work out, you try the next one and you try the next one. And then you ask three friends to help. And you start feeling connected and involved. The story I'll share is on the eve that we left the Paris Accord. I was giving a talk on climate change in a rural town in northern New Mexico that's a resource extraction town. And even though the news that we left the Paris Accord was hard to hear, it wasn't as hard because I had engaged in this difficult but constructive conversation in a community near me that I want to feel more connected to, because where and how they manage their economy then affects the cold, snowy places that I love. And we have to find a way to have those conversations across places and keep trying and invest in city council and invest in initiatives and all of that.
I think that to bring it back to Homeward Bound and Women in Science, that we have such a unique... Not the movie, not this time.
So
we'll get there.
I'm easily confused.
Yeah. But women scientists have such an interesting role to play with what's happening right now, because scientists aren't used to being in this new dilemma where they're not being believed in mass and where they're being excluded from conversations and where they're being unfunded. But that is exactly the female experience. I mean, we aren't believed
You've been here forever.
In mass. We're excluded from conversations constantly. We're out, you know, excluded from boardrooms and sports and journalism and movies and political representation. Sure. We're underfunded and underpaid, particularly non-white women. So female scientists who have been fighting for equality their whole lives, especially in such a sexist, to be quite honest, a very sexist field, we have all of the tools already to lift all scientists up now in this time when people are distrustful of science and distrustful of scientists. We already have all those advocacy tools in our toolbox. And so I feel like it's a really unique position for female scientists to become leaders and speak for all scientists right now.
That was incredible, wasn't it? What she just shared?
That was.
Yeah, it was. And it's so true. My wife is an incredibly smart and powerful and impassioned feminist screenwriter in Los Angeles, and has spent her whole life being ignored despite how successful she is and being harassed. And now we have a daughter and she's both terrified and empowered. And like you said, you know, there are a lot of folks who are going, oh, you know, nobody listens to science. And she's going, yeah, that's my whole life, man. You know, that's my whole life. But she's, you know, has realized in the past year, oh, wait a minute, I have inadvertently and consciously spent a lifetime building up the tools to defend myself and to get my shit done despite that, and to be productive and to fight back if I need to. And now, you know, starting with the Women's March, when she came back with her pink pussy hat and put it on our son and said, you're going to wear it for a week, whether you like it or not. she is... You know, she is excited to use those and share those and get out there and do that. It's incredibly inspiring. And, you know, we should just give everything to you. That's basically the moral of the story.
I'll take it.
So one of our main goals is to really, like we've kind of discussed and seems like we all share, is to shine a light on where we need to go, us specifically, Quinn and Brian. Our listeners and our country and our world as a people, where do we need to go as a people? So what to you are the big actionable questions that we or our listeners or people going to talk to their city council or run for mayor should be asking of their representatives, whether it's local or whether they're using fivecalls.org to call their national representatives? To you guys and your professions and your life experiences, what are the big questions they should be asking?
Well, that's a hard question.
All right. We're one for one.
Yeah. Okay. Good talk. Where would you start if you were talking to someone for the first time? If you were going to your city council and realized this whole year has gone by and they haven't really said much about emissions, and maybe you're in a city that's not, you're not Miami or New York, but sea level rise might be an issue in the next 50 years, or there's a bottling plant that's pumping out a bunch of emissions that nobody's talked about. What are your first questions to them? Because to me, questions are much more, provoke more action than just spitting facts at people.
Well, I'm going to go, I'm going to answer your question, but with a very different direction than I think you were headed.
Please, please.
Which is that we need to understand when our actions aren't aligned with our values. So I think for many of us, we know and understand our values, we're refining them and understanding them better. But then oftentimes we can make decisions that are inconsistent. And I think that's us as individuals and mm-hmm. government can make those decisions. So where and how can one of the big changes that moves forward be people asking good questions to help elicit the disconnect between what we want and what we're going to get so that we recognize it and we make a different choice. I mean, it sure is sad when, you know, you set your mind to wanting something and then you realize that instead of saving money, you just keep spending your money. And you know, a big part of what we're doing with our environment is we're spending everything in the bank and we're sure. spending everything in a bunch of friends' bank accounts. And we're spending the bank accounts of people in other countries that we've never met.
Right.
And we have to recognize that we can't keep doing that if what we want to be able to do is be happy, healthy, and safe. And so how do we start to align our choices so that we're not just looking short term, later this year, next year, we're looking 50 years from now. And for me, that's one of the big things that's been invaluable about being in the Southwest US is being near and close and engaging with a lot of Native American communities and realizing it's the way they think. They think the way more of us need to be thinking, and how can those voices be heard more in our world? Mm-hmm. The voice of Native American peoples who always think in terms of 50 and 100 and 500 years from now. I think we can get there and move into that space and have our actions be consistent with our values and think in the long term. And so I think the question I would go to city council with is, you know, are we thinking in the long term? Is that the way we're thinking? Or are we thinking about how we make sure we manage a small issue over a short time scale, which sure. isn't that important?
I love it.
Okay, I've come up with my three questions.
Let's do it.
What are you doing about voter suppression?
Great.
Would be, I think, the first question I would ask, because that is a huge deal mm-hmm. That's not talked about enough and which affects women, minorities, and students the most, and the elderly. My second question would be, who in our community is most at risk to climate change and what the hell are you doing about it? Mm-hmm. Because one of the things that we rarely talk about with climate change is the environmental justice angle of it and how even in the United States, we have populations that are much more vulnerable to impacts than others, both directly and also in their ability to recover from climate change impacts. So I think that I would make sure to have them start thinking about that, because I think a lot of city councils don't think about it in those terms. They think about poverty and they think about access to education and good schools, but they don't think about how climate change is impacting Americans, because that's something that, you know, we're so rich and it's not supposed to, unless you know you live in Florida.
Yeah.
And then my third question I'm blanking on, but I did have one.
Ooh.
We believe you.
I was on such a roll.
Yeah, that's too bad. That's too bad.
You were so good.
But maybe now we have an opportunity to talk about the movie, Ann.
Yeah, right. Perfect.
Bringing it back, Heidi.
I love it. So, but building on your entire careers and coming up in these families that helped push you in this direction, which is so important and awesome, and coming off the boat.
Ship.
Do you, son of a bitch.
Thank you.
Do you
it's
guys,
no
do you guys have, besides each other, any really reliable allies in science, in politics, in civics that you're currently calling upon?
Calling
I'm getting
upon
there.
For what exactly?
It's a great question. It could be anything. It could be comfort. It could be knowledge. It could be mentorship. It could be action. You know, who did you call to do the congressional briefing? You know, who are the people that you know are going to be instrumental in getting things done?
We're going to call you all, right? And keep asking for opportunities to talk and share voices. One of the people yes. who's become an advocate and helpful is I did a podcast this summer with Robin Morgan at Women's Media Center. Mm-hmm. And And it's really incredible the opportunity that that was for just a 15-minute spot on her Women's Media Center live show.
Sure.
Then created the opportunity to be at a global feminism conference organized by the French Embassy in New York City, and a chance to share my voice alongside Cecile Richards and with Planned Parenthood and some other incredible women in leadership. I mentioned that she's someone who has and is in a position of influence. And so that's fantastic. But I've also found that it doesn't have to be the person who's already the most shiny and sparkly and is already has a big role. Finding people, like Anne and I have found each other, and figuring out what you can create together from wherever you're at, that we can lead without yet having influence. And then that creates the opportunity to have more influence. And I think that's really important, because we're seeing that as part of this year. More and more people who are putting their voice forward in really interesting ways. And then, you know, 500 Women Scientists is a great example of that. And then being able to share their voice with more people. What about you, Anne?
So I found myself returning. I was a board member of a group called DC EcoWomen in Washington, DC. And it's actually a national nonprofit that has chapters in various cities. And the whole mission of this group is to help give women the tools to become leaders in the environmental community. And, you know, DC is the capital of networking also. And so it's partly valuable in that way, but the friendships I have formed with these women who, again, are in various disciplines within science and the environmental community. And then sometimes they work in business as well. One of the women that I was on the board with works for Amazon now. And getting those different perspectives from their backgrounds, from their careers, from their expertise, I found myself repeatedly calling upon them. And so I think these communities that we build as women with other women who share our experiences and share our frustrations are incredibly, incredibly important. And being able to support each other and help each other succeed in our chosen fields and our chosen paths is something that I have found increasingly valuable in my personal as well as professional life. And I didn't want to go through the podcast without talking about how important DC EcoWomen has been to me, but how important these type of organizations like Heidi was just mentioning as well are incredibly valuable outlets for women and for especially young women who are just entering into careers and are facing a number of obstacles that we have yet to overcome.
Awesome. That's really exciting. Are there any specific civic leaders, either locally or nationally, that you guys feel are fighting the good fight every day?
Yes. I don't want to say who they are, because I think that one of the problems we had in the last election and that we're seeing right now is that no leader, no politician is going to be your savior.
Sure.
I've been incredibly frustrated with these cults of personality that build up around people, and then they don't, when that person doesn't get a nomination or that person doesn't get elected, then people become totally disengaged from the entire process. And sure. I think that is so dangerous, and I'm so frustrated seeing my friends do that in the past election. And I think leaders are important, but I think that we have to realize that everybody is fallible. And I don't think any one person is going to solve any of these problems. And that's why I want to emphasize the network and the communication and the building new relationships, because this is no longer something that one person is going to be able to solve. And so by naming people who are particularly important, I think we lose focus on the fact that this is something that we have to do as a community and not just look towards one person.
I love it.
That is an incredible and unexpected answer.
I agree with Anne on all of that. It's hard to name any one or two or 10 people, because what we need are thousands and hundreds of thousands of people to put their name and their voice forward in leadership. And the analogy a student and I came up with is that so often it feels like we're being fed information through a fire hose, and nobody plays in a fire hose. And a different analogy for what we need. And this parallels what Anne just shared is, we need to create the opportunity for more sprinklers to be out there. One purpose, many voices, and movement and shifting of who those voices are, that we don't look to news reports on climate change and see two or three voices that are repeatedly being referred to and get the first calls. Let's each and every one of us that feels like we have something to share, be one of the voices and two of the stories, and know that we'll share that opportunity with someone else.
Yeah, I love that. You know, obviously in this podcast, we would love to have, you know, the big players that people find sexy, but I would I'm never going to kick them out of bed, but I would love to use that to get more listeners who can hear the stories of folks that aren't normally called on CNN, who, you know, are running for city council or have run for city council, or, you know, the folks out there on the ground. You know, I was just reading about this husband and wife team at the CDC who are chasing down monkeypox, and what is their life like, and why how did they get there, and what are they doing about it, and why is it so vitally important? And those people, I feel like, are the ones that hopefully will inspire more folks to get involved, because I think you're right. I think when we anoint kings and queens, it makes them a little untouchable, and it can make that office seem that way and unattainable. But seeing other folks that are doing it, and they might not be, you know, capable of becoming a scientist themselves like you folks, but that doesn't mean they can't have an effect in some way. We want to highlight those stories, but we also want to, you know, it's no use if we can't inspire people to action. So are there ways folks, our listeners can support you guys, or support what you do, or support your particular brands of science?
It's lots of ways. I would, from the political standpoint, making sure that science is funded. A lot of the science, that very, very important climate science that is being done, takes millions and millions of dollars. And we've seen reports come out about Trump turning off satellites that we need for long, long-term data.
I heard one of them was already built and we destroyed it. Yep. Is that right?
I mean, these things are just unacceptable. They're unacceptable, and they're immoral. So making your voices heard on issues like that, that we aren't going to let him decide the fate of 6 billion people on Earth, or however many billion there are now.
So many.
Too many.
You know, whatever he's feeling like tweeting that day, and whatever axe he has to grind that day. And one of the things that's rarely talked about with climate change is that one of the best ways to combat climate change is to educate women around the world. Mm-hmm. And so supporting programs that educate girls in other countries, that introduce girls to science in this country, that elect women to positions of power, like an Emily's List organization that gives campaign funding to female candidates who are more likely than to support girls' education once they get to Congress. I think that's a very important.
Sure.
If people are looking for a way to financially support different organizations, and then just getting involved in their local communities and doing their part in alleviating climate vulnerabilities in their local community, and figuring out what those are as well, and educating yourself on what those are.
How could people support you, Anne? I think that was part of Quinn's question.
Yeah. Is there somebody out there who can write you a grant?
Yes, but I feel as a Minnesotan, I feel extremely uncomfortable asking for it.
Typical.
No, I mean, the University of Minnesota has lost more funding from our state legislature than almost any other university in the country over the last two decades.
Whoa.
So, and that I feel every day.
That makes sense.
This is not just about me. There's lots of women out there who aren't on podcasts. And sure. Don't get to ask for funding. So
sure.
These bigger buckets are the ones that we need to focus on.
Absolutely. So how would you guys like to use opportunities like this podcast or another one, to take a moment and really speak truth to power? You know, what is something you really want to get out that you haven't, whether it's anger or fear or, you know, something you want to preach? Is there anything else out there to take a moment?
I think for me, I keep coming up with different names for a book I want to author. I feel you asked what the next step is and where and how do you bring big names into your podcast. I think part of it is that we need to have opportunities like this, that new big names are created, names that share more voices with the world. And I've talked to some friends and understand that the process for writing a book proposal and finding and creating the opportunity to publish a book, I mean, it's got challenges and it's not something that I've ever been trained to do. And I can talk to friends who know how to do it. And I've come up with, I can't even tell you how many titles of this book. The one that I like best is Great Hearted Courage. And part of what I found interesting about that is at first I started with Undaunted Courage, and that's sort of the introspection on self and trying to self-discover this past year, more than I have in any other time in my life. And
that one's already taken though, Heidi.
It's already a book exactly about Lewis and Clark. So I had to come up with something different, but I thought that the interconnection was great is that, we look back on the explorers, of past history. And, there are many of us that are putting ourselves forward. We're exploring the world. We're exploring, countryside and landscapes where few people go, but we're also starting to explore and understand where and how do we take what we learn in those places to the even more challenging place, like I've alluded to in this podcast. Of for me, the Great Hearted Courage is in partnering with Anne and going someplace like DC and finding new ways to feel comfortable in a space that maybe Lewis and Clark never had to explore and understand, because it was a different time and resources were plentiful and now resources are dwindling and we have to manage the resources well. We will not have the future we want if we spend all the money that's in the bank.
I love the title.
Thank you.
Where can our listeners follow you guys online? Where are you active, if you are, for better or worse?
I am on social media as at Heidi Mountains, and that's on Twitter and Instagram and Facebook.
Awesome.
And I'm not nearly as media savvy as Heidi, so I have several different names that obviously I need to consolidate.
Well, we're out of time.
I got off Twitter because I guess social media is where I need to get better at, because I got off Twitter because I was so disheartened by the anger and the trolling and the pressure that is put on women when they make themselves visible on social media, and the number of sexist threats and comments that they get when they put themselves out there. So I'm not very active on social media for that reason right now. And because I want my PhD sometime in the next.
details.
Yes.
All right. So Anne, they'll follow you on your IMDb page. We got that.
Absolutely. If they Google my name and the University of Minnesota, I'm sure I come up with more information. But
you do.
Besides Homeward Bound, the movie.
There's got to be a sequel in there. We'll make it happen.
I think so. With penguins.
Right?
Yeah.
Sure. Why not? Oh, everybody loves penguins. And it's so appropriate to what you guys do.
Yeah.
Oh, there's some great photos. I've seen photos of you guys with penguins in the background on your trip, and they're lovely.
Well, we were quite enthralled by all the penguins.
How could you?
It was a sad day. The first day we didn't see them on the way back.
Oh yeah.
I recently broke out Planet Earth for my children, and they just don't want to watch anything else because, well, it's amazing.
Because it's the best show ever.
Yeah. It's incredible. Well, listen, guys, thank you so much for your time today. Obviously you guys are so busy. You've been bouncing around. Heidi's sick. You went to Congress. Hell of a week for a number of reasons, but we thank you for your time and for all that you guys do, and hope that you keep kicking ass out there.
Well, thank you for having us.
Thanks to our incredible guests today, and thanks to all of you for tuning in. We hope this episode has made your commute or workout or dishwashing or fucking dog walking late at night that much more pleasant. As a reminder, subscribe to our free email newsletter at importantnotimportant.com, and it is all the news most vital to our survival as a species.
And you can find us all over the World Wide Web. You can follow us on Twitter at Important Not Imp. Facebook and Instagram at Important Not Important. Pinterest and Tumblr, the same thing. So follow us, share us, like us, tell your friends. You know the drill. And please subscribe to our show wherever you listen to things like this. And if you're really fucking awesome, rate us on Apple Podcasts. Help keep the lights on. You can find the show notes from today right in your little podcast player and at our website, importantnotimportant.com.
Thanks, as always, to Tim Bland for all of our jamming music, to all of you for listening, and to our moms for making us. Have a great day.
Thanks, Mom.